Yeah, and then Hot Rod comes in to try and stop him.
My notes go, f***ing Hot Rod.
My notes go, so Hot Rod is the Star-Lord of the Transformers universe. Okay.
Fair. That's pretty good.
I mean, like, Optimus had it on lockdown. You really didn't need to f*** it up. You have this whole demographic that you could pull from, like a little girls being interested in things that are primarily or dominantly promoted to boys, and you know, boys who are interested in things that are primarily being promoted to girls. You have these whole markets. Why not dip into it? If you are such a capitalist, then go ahead and actually expand your market.
Okay, but I will put in that Disney still struggles with this, an example, because of Encanto. They thought that they were going to sell a whole bunch of...
The
pretty one?
Mm-hmm.
The one voiced by the chick from Glee, right? But
no, the one from Doom Patrol.
No, this is what I'm saying. Is it Doom Patrol?
It's, yeah.
Okay, so they thought they were going to sell a whole bunch of the flower-creating lady, whose name is out of my head, because I only have eyes
Isabella.
For... Isabella.
Isabella.
Right, but... We all of us have eyes for Dolores. Dolores? No.
No.
Dorothy.
It was, what is it?
The big strong one.
Oh, but she has a name.
I know.
Does anybody hear, what is that? Wait. Let me sing. Isabella and Luisa.
Luisa. Okay. I don't know why I changed her into Dolores. Anyways, Luisa, actually, kids identified more with her. And so they sold out of those dolls. And as opposed to this movie where they made Luisa dolls and they sold out everywhere. And then, so they knew to crank up production on that. They didn't even attempt that with this.
See, and that kind of goes to like if you have something, if you are creating a property and you want to sell merchandise for it, you have to be careful about like what you put out there, because you don't know what the audience is actually going to go for. Like, I always think that some of the shirt ideas that we have, those speak really well to us. Like, if we ever had a shirt idea, I would love to have a shirt that says save it for the podcast. But we don't ever say that on the podcast. That would really just be for us. what would a large audience actually respond to merch wise? And we don't really have a large enough following to really talk those kind of numbers.
Yeah, but like I could imagine a Sean Fax shirt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Sean Fax. And then on the back it's Sean Fax. And yeah, it'll be like at the lower end of it.
Yeah.
On your butt.
I just like one with each of our names, and Jen's is like Jen.
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 That's how she says it. Needs me to do something.
No, not to do something, but when you've exacerbated me in some way.
Yeah. I would have bought multiple RCs to make sure that I always had one. Mm-hmm. My mom would have thought I was crazy. She probably wouldn't have allowed it since it was really her money, but I would have tried to buy multiple. Mm-hmm. And right now on our recording desk is a version of the toy RC from the Bumblebee movie. And I have another version from the cartoon. She's actually blue in the cartoon, but I have a pink version of her.
So RC was your favorite Transformer?
I had such a crush on RC, like such a crush. And she's got like
she likes them tall. And
she's
robotic.
Got the circle ears that are really reminiscent of Princess Leia. And she's got like a really deep, raspy, feminine voice like Jessica Rabbit. And she's got, what's that movie from like the 20s that has a robot?
Metropolis?
Yeah, Metropolis. She's got sort of a Metropolis face to her.
Do you know, side fact, side fun Sean fact, apparently that movie as of January 1st became public domain.
Woo!
This year.
We could do a watch along with our fans on the Patreon.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it's now public domain.
That would be awesome. Yeah. Let's do that. Yeah. We've got cameras. We've got free time. I could put on some mascara.
Yeah.
So all of the Autobots that I just introduced are outside of Autobot City. Perceptor's like, there's a, you know, he uses all of his big scientific language to basically say they're outnumbered. Then they Robert Stack's Ultra Magnus basically splits the party out, which you never do. Some of them to go try to notify Optimus of the situation, and the others to try to transform Autobot City, which in this part of the timeline for Transformers is not a sentient robot. This is like the only thing that they transform that isn't sentient. But later he is. And I forget what, Metroplex. Later Autobot
like
City
Danny
becomes.
The street, except.
Yeah. Yeah. A big, there was a time when the big Transformers were a big deal to Mattel. And so they, and they all transformed into like some battle station sort of deal.
Speaking of big, gigantic ones, this is my favorite was the appearance of what the Destructicons and Destructor.
Yes, the
construction equipment ones that turn into like a gigantic guy with like seven of them.
Mm-hmm. And you said you had the whole set.
I did, and then I lost them.
There was a nice transition. I'm always looking out for them for Lydia nowadays, but they battle and battle and battle, and it goes from night to morning. And so you know that they've battled through the night. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a very interesting detail.
Right. And isn't it in the morning when Optimus Prime shows up?
Mm-hmm.
He shows up with the all-time favorite Dinobots! And as someone who draws in my spare time and notices artwork, my favorite part is where Sludge, the Brontosaurus dinosaur, goes to attack Destructor. It gets hit in the head, and his eyeballs turn into big anime eyeballs and sort of like go up in screen. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's a weird effect.
They're obviously the most cartoony characters that we get. Well, nearly the most cartoony characters that we get in this entire film. Physically, obviously, they are.
Do you notice like Grimlock's arms don't even look robotic? They look plastic. Like,
they're articulated.
And I have a big head and tiny little arms.
when Optimus joins the fight, he transforms into his very iconic semi-truck. And that's when we get the very iconic, you got the touch.
Touch.
Dun, dun, dun.
You got the power.
Dun, 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 dun.
And he drives in and then he like transforms back into Optimus Prime and leaves his like back end.
I would like to point out, I hadn't noticed this before, but he actually like runs over like four or five Decepticons along the way. Just like drives.
Yeah, the deaths in this movie, like I know we're probably like 20 minutes in at this point, but it's like death is real in this universe. And I can see why it would traumatize anybody. I really can. Be like, oh no, these aren't supposed, like if your car gets busted, you can take your car to the shop. I mean, unless the engine is like has a cracked head gasket. When my car gets a cracked head gasket, I have to get rid of it. I'm going to be sad.
I'll take it out into the field and shoot it with my car. Fun fact, I've never watched Old Yeller.
One of my favorite pieces of animation in this movie is when Optimus detaches from his trailer, and we never really know where this thing goes. Like, it just sort of shows up and leaves whenever he's transforming, but he jumps up into the air, and this huge mechanical robot with no thrusters stays in the air a good 25 or 30 seconds to just blast away as many Decepticons as possible. But as far as like we discussed while watching it, some of the perspectives are a little off because it's all hand-drawn animation, but I thought that part in particular where we sort of get this bird's eye view of him shooting all of the Decepticons is pretty good.
Upside down as he sort of vaults over them.
Yeah, but kind of like a rainbow fire, like a rainbow going over them, but he's the rainbow and he's shooting lasers at him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then he comes across Megatron and they have their showdown.
With lightsabers.
Yeah.
Oh, which is only the beginning of the whole this thing is Star Wars thing that I only learned about today. And that's all I had to contribute to this moment.
This is, as far as the most iconic quotes from this movie that I can remember, that I think probably at least one of my brothers can also quote, is Prime says to Megatron, one shall stand and one shall fall. And Megatron says, why throw away your life so recklessly? And Optimus
you should
says,
ask yourself.
Yeah, that's a question you should ask yourself, Megatron, which is basically just...
I know you are, but what am I?
Yeah, I'm rubber and you're glue.
Didn't you say that in one of the Michael Bay movies too? Like one shall stand, one shall fall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then they have at it, and they really tear into each other in this part.
Yeah, Optimus Prime gets the upper hand, and Megatron is asking for mercy, but he sees a gun.
You ask for mercy?
Yeah.
Oh, you who are without mercy now plead for it? I thought you were made of sterner stuff.
Yeah, and then Hot Rod comes in to try and stop him.
My notes go, f***ing Hot Rod.
My notes go, so Hot Rod is the Star-Lord of the Transformers universe. Okay.
Fair. That's pretty good.
I mean, like, Optimus had it on lockdown. You really didn't need to f*** up.
You're right.
So Hot Rod is taken hostage by Megatron, and Megatron is shooting at Optimus saying, fall, fall, because he wants him to be the one that falls. And then, I mean, he does get like some really good shots in. And then what?
Well, then there's a fatal shot to Optimus Prime.
And at that point, Megatron doesn't need Hot Rod anymore and just throws him to the side.
Yeah, she just throws him to the side.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm done with you.
Could have solved the whole movie if he'd just done one little quick laser blast under his arm and then thrown him to the side. But
yeah, or yeah, essentially. And then don't the Dinobots come in and kind of, you know, get Megatron there? Because Megatron gets wounded too, but he isn't fatally wounded the way that Optimus Prime is.
He gets knocked off a building and crashes down, mm-hmm. and then Starscream is like, "Let's leave him," you know, and they're like,
He physically kicks him while he's down.
Yeah. Starscream's like, I'm going to kick you.
Starscream's great.
He's like, Soundwave, save me. And Soundwave is like, as you command.
Yeah.
And then they take off on Astro Train.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we cut to the destruction of my childhood. The one scene that probably caused more children grief than any other animated film in the 80s.
And that's saying a lot because E.T. was in the 80s.
That's true. Yeah. And
Applauders, did you think you're going to get to a robot hospital bedside scene? Well, here we are.
Preceptor, the medical science officer, says that the wounds appear to be fatal. And Daniel says, Prime, you can't die. And then Prime says, don't grieve. Soon I will be one with the Matrix. And I'm trying to remember, like, line for line how this all plays out. But
well, then he opens his chest because he's not quite dead yet. And he pulls out the Matrix, which is basically one of those thigh exercise machines from the 80s with like a blue sparkly orb in it.
The Suzanne Summers Thigh Master.
Thank you, sir. That is exactly right.
I mean, that's what they would use for the live action.
Yes. Bringing it back.
Yeah.
Then he goes to hand it, but he becomes too weak and he fumbles it. And so it doesn't actually go to who he's indicated to be his successor.
It goes to Hot Rod, catches it before it falls, and there's this like sparkly glow behind him. And then he does hand it. I mean, to Hot Rod's credit, he does hand it to Ultra Magnus,
mm-hmm.
who then puts it inside of himself. And after he does, what happens to Optimus Prime?
Okay, so another Sean fact here. According to the screenwriters, Hasbro underestimated the extent to which Prime's death would shock the young audience. Story consultant Dan Flint Deely said, we didn't know he was an icon. It was a toy show. We thought we were killing off the old product line to replace it with new products. Kids were crying in the theaters. We heard people leaving the movie. We were getting a lot of nasty notes about it. There is some story about a kid who locked himself in his bedroom for 2 weeks. So,
depression is a real thing, even if you are a child and it is a fictional character.
Uh-huh. So we talked about G.I. Joe, the movie. It was produced at the exact same time by the same company, and it agreed that both movies would suffer the loss of their leaders by killing off Optimus Prime and General Duke. But because Transformers came out first and ended up being such a big controversy that the writers and the animators redid it to leave Duke in a coma. Because, they screwed up real bad on that. Yeah, so the producers wanted to kill off the existing toy line. They killed off Optimus Prime, Ironhide, Ratchet, Prowl, Brawn, Wheeljack, Windcharger, Megatron, Starscream, Skywarp, Thundercracker, Shrapnel, Kickback, Bombshell, and I guess Huffer died off screen.
How many characters is that?
Let us count.
It's a higher kill count than
about 15.
So it's a higher kill count than Infinity War.
It's a higher kill count than The Shining.
Everything has a higher kill count than The Shining. It's higher than Nakatomi Plaza.
Mm.
Die Hard. I knew I had it in
there. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was.
It's a lot of death. Good
traumatizing
job. Good job,
to young
movie.
Jen.
I would like to say one thing about this scene. I feel it's very well executed. Like the emotions for like how the characters react. You see RC, you know, like covering her mouth. You see Dan crying, like literally weeping over Optimus's dead body, which goes from this very colorful look to just being very gray, very monotoned. And so I feel like it's very well done. So when I hear about how much it affected kids, this kind of speaks to how media can affect us emotionally. And so it's just like, it's just very well done. And so it's like, it speaks to the creators of the movie, you know, putting a lot of effort into it, wanting this emotional beat to have impact, even if it was based out off of the idea of, you know, getting rid of the old and bringing in the new.
Yeah.
So, oh, go ahead, Jen.
Oh, I was just going to say Optimus for a lot of people was like a father figure. And he definitely was for the Autobots. And the vibrato that Peter Cullen brought to this role. He's also probably most famous for Eeyore and lots of Disney characters. I think he might have been Baloo, but I'm not totally sure about that one. No, I think that's somebody else. But yeah, he just, Peter Cullen and who's the other, Frank Welker,
mm-hmm.
as Megatron. It was very difficult for me transitioning into the next cartoon series, not having them be voice actors anymore.
I think it's great that everybody in this room knows who Frank Welker is.
Yeah. Little fun fact. We've discussed Frank Welker's work before in Opus, A Wish for Wings That Work.
Oh, yeah.
He was Santa.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, thick. I think we refer to him as a thick Nord in that episode,
which is Sean. You should see the look on Sean's face. Applauders. That's his wife's type.
No comment.
Frank Welker was also the voice of. He does a lot of like really raspy characters. So he was the Cave of Wonders voice.
Yeah.
And he's also Soundwave in this. They just they do some additional distortion on Soundwave's voice to make him sound even more robotic than the other ones. But yeah, from here, do we not cut to the Decepticons on Astrotrain?
We cut to Starscream totally taser facing Megatron. Do you remember in Guardians 2? When Taserface jettisons a bunch of guys out of the airlock.
I call this scene yeet.
Megatron got defenestrated.
Correct.
That's a great
excellent term.
Yeah, they throw out, I guess, for some reason, Astrotrain's like, we got to lose some weight, which is kind of like, aren't they weightless? But, you know, like in outer space. So, but he's like, we got to lose some weight. And they're like, survival of the fittest. Who's the worst? And like all the Insecticons and Megatron are like, no. And they're like, yes. And so they throw him out.
That's what happens when you are of no use to fascist organizations. They will yeet you out of an airlock.
Starscream's like, bye. I'm my ship now.
And then they all start doing like this debate. Like, y'all are evil. Like, you're not going to come to a consensus.
Now that Mighty Megatron has departed, it's now, I don't remember exactly what the quote is, but he nominates himself as the new leader, which he's always doing in the cartoon whenever Megatron goes off somewhere. So that totally makes sense for his character. And then also the Constructicons say, we form Devastator, the most powerful robot, so we should rule. And then Soundwave says, Soundwave superior, Constructicons inferior, because obviously he's a rhyming boombox. And who else says that they want to take
the
mantle?
I think that's it, but my favorite thing was that the Destructicons say that he can't lead, that Soundwave can't lead because he's uncharismatic.
Yeah. Yes, that was what I was going to say.
And then, like, his little guys come out of his shirt, like one of the little tape players, and he's like, who are you calling, and I wrote this down, uncrasomatic.
It's the little details like that that make a movie really fantastic and very mm-hmm. rewatchable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, uncharismatic kind of does really describe Soundwave, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens to Megatron?
No one summons Megatron.
Well, then I'm glad that I have the privilege to be the first. Megatron meets Unicron.
While he's floating in outer space, apparently Unicron comes across them, like, because space, apparently, in this movie is, like, a neighborhood big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So let me just pop down to the neighborhood, Unicron, and, just turn in my used Megatron and get my 5-cent refund.
Yeah. I like how when Megatron is faced with annihilation, he's just sort of like, okay.
Yeah, here we come to the MacGuffin of the movie. Unicron says, I need you to destroy the matrix of leadership.
He'd be floating there like a butthole on a ball with horns. That's what he looks like.
And I need you to destroy this little tiny thing for some reason.
This little anal bead. That would destroy me.
You're not wrong.
I mean, he does look like a floating butthole in space, yeah. Doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
But the inverse of what a butthole actually does, a butthole expels, he consumes.
Not all buttholes. There's a
Hashtag not all buttholes.
Let's start this hashtag.
In Steve-O's comedy special, he talks about how he was putting things in there. And he was on a really bad bender. And so he's like, no, I think I can drink this beer with my butt. And so he does so. And his body was like, okay. And then it wasn't okay. And it's the most disgusting bit of his entire routine. And that's saying something because it's Steve-O. You know, watch that not on a full stomach.
Probably won't.
Yeah, I don't think it's not really your style. Maddie would hate it.
I'm sure she would.
Megatron asks what's in it for him to do this work for Unicron, and Unicron says your bargaining position is
untenable, tenuous,
something like that. Yeah, where it's like you have like no you have nothing that I mean.
What Unicron is all like, what are you gonna bargain with? You're floating, dying in space, guy.
Yeah, you gotta do this for me.
Yeah, I'm gonna kill you. That's the only thing that you got is your life.
Highly dubious.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's a good word.
Yeah.
There's a lot of words that are used in this that make me that it feels a little Shakespearean. Just with like very like, you know, very, very poetic language. Very like they use very large words. So as an adult watching it, because this was not a part of my childhood at all, there's a part of me that's just sort of like, oh, okay, this is very let me adjust my glasses here.
Well, old Unicron does upgrade Megatron. And we have what Jen has dubbed
the most 80s thing that has ever 80s'd.
Yeah. They freeze frame on him with like space around him and there's lights around him. And then he turns and he from his middle, he expands into a matrix like of like a wire frame. And then he like comes back, like it comes back together and he's like, and you are now Galvatron.
I like to call this magical girl transition, sort of similar to like Sailor Moon or Gem and the Holograms or any cartoon where a girl would suddenly change her costume.
Fun fact about Magic Girls is they were around, you know, before the time of the first Magic Girl. Oh, I can't remember it, but there was an 80s anime that was very much like, you know, you would have Magic Girl transformation.
It's like a precursor to Sailor Moon and such.
Mm-hmm. Right. It was a little bit more adult. Like Sailor Moon became so good with the mainstream because of the fact that it was, you know, kind of PG'd instead of it being like PG-13 in some of the earlier stuff in Japan, you would have like Barbie doll nudity instead of like full on nudity during the transformation scenes.
Sailor Moon also is part of this animation studio.
Mm-hmm.
So not only does Megatron get an upgrade to Galvatron with a cool little headpiece, but he also gets an upgrade to his voice and goes from Frank Welker to
Leonard Nimoy.
Pew, pew. You vuvuzoo noise. Vuvuzoo noise.
Fireworks.
And it's not just Galvatron. A whole bunch of other toys that will never be sold again transform, I mean, are metamorphosized into different...
The word is metamorphosed.
Okay.
I think it's some of the Insecticons and like one of like the jet planes.
Yeah. Like maybe like Thundercracker.
Yeah, I think so.
I could see the red tail lights.
Yeah, but was it Man Baby where they used the word metamorphosed a lot? What movie was it that they kept using that word?
Did you just reference Man Baby?
Baby Man
Nope. Don't. How dare you? I retract.
Go back to our previous episode on Man Baby from like 4 months ago.
So there's like one of them is named Scourge, and the sweeps are basically the same toy as Scourge, just painted a little bit differently. And then there's Cyclonus, and I still have not figured this out. There's like Unicron actually says Cyclonus and his minion, I think, and it's never explained who the f*** this minion is, and he's never shown ever again in the cartoons, any of them. And he's just basically a copy of Cyclonus. That's just interesting.
Obviously, this isn't just his minion. This is his lover.
Okay. Okay. No. It's his son.
Oh.
And he's called Dirt Devil. Because that's what a mini cyclone is. And it's also a vacuum cleaner.
So basically he has a falling out with his father Cyclonus, and then he goes to Earth and he just markets himself as a vacuum.
You're not meant to live with your parents forever.
Right.
You got the suck. All right. So Galvatron says, I will.
Getting to watch Sean react to this in real time rather than yell at me across a factory floor when he finally comes across whatever way I've defiled it. It's just so good.
I'll tear apart every Autobot. I'll tear apart Ultra Magnus and every other robot, Autobot, until the Matrix is destroyed. And off they go.
And the next scene is Starscream is victorious in his leadership, and he holds a ceremony to... let everybody know that he is now in charge.
The trumpets.
He crowns himself king and then destroys the trumpets that are crowning.
They keep interrupting him.
Yeah. But then Galvatron shows up and is all like, nope. Also, you're going to die now. And Starscream just dies.
He disintegrates.
Like goes like again, color out of him. And then.
Which is great because his crown is so stupid looking. I f-ing hate it.
I would like to point out this entire time during the entire show. Like the run, Megatron can't hit anything. Megatron has never hit anything anytime.
I told you it's Star time, Wars and he's a stormtrooper.
He one-shots Starscream, just transforms into like a little tank thing and just goes boop, and Starscream's like, oh, done.
It might have had something to do with the stupid crown that had like Volkswagen bug-sized rubies on it.
I'm pretty sure it also had to do with the cape that he was wearing.
Yeah, that kind of static attracts things like that.
Out of all the characters, I felt bad for Starscream because it's like his ending was like anticlimactic. It wasn't even like, it was like, oh, hey, you finally got to what you wanted for like the last two seasons. Oh, never mind. Now you're dead.
Yeah, Starscream had the shortest reign of any monarch in history.
Yep, done.
That is true, but Jen has informed me that he comes back in ghost form.
Yeah, robot ghosts are a thing in Transformers, and I think it's like the head or the last brain functions of Unicron summon Starscream's ghost to take over. I'm forgetting the tall T, not the Dinobot, but there's a tall T-Rex, Metroplex, I think. No, Metroplex was the Autobot city. Doesn't matter. He was cool as a toy because you put batteries in him and he actually walked. Like, he could turn him on and he would actually walk. So anyway, ghosts are a thing. This is also some of the most quotable lines in this movie happen here, because Starscream says, "Who disturbs my coronation?" And Galvatron says, "Coronation, Starscream, this is bad comedy," which is just a, this is just a good line because it describes our show so well. And Starscream says, "Megatron, is that you?" Galvatron says, "Here's a hint." And the hint is him shooting his barrel. And then Galvatron walks up to the stage where the coronation is happening, and he like just wipes the floor with the crown. He steps on that crown and he just smears it on the stage. And Galvatron says, "Will anyone else attempt to fill his shoes?" And then I think it's Rumble, one of the tapes, says, "What did he say his name was?" It's Galvatron. And then everybody says, "Hail Galvatron!"
And then he doesn't, isn't, this is he, this is the scene where Galvatron then is just like, "And I will destroy everything and rule." And then Unicron is like, "Instant migraine, zappy beam." And he's like, "I serve you." Or is that later?
I think it might have been in this.
I have a note that says, that talks about the moon bases are done, and then Galvatron resists. So
okay,
I think so. We go into Galvatron attacking the moon bases.
Okay.
Because he's a much more effective general than Megatron ever was. And then that's when he is just like has this influx of, "I will control everything." But then Unicron is like, "Don't forget that matrix. Don't forget that promise that you gave me, because you made a deal and I'm the devil."
So Unicron comes up and tries to destroy the moon bases of Cybertron.
That's what it is.
And he eats the first one. And I think he's about ready to eat the second one. And Spike and Bumblebee? Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, Spike and Bumblebee.
They decide to blow up the second moon while it is inside Omicron's mouth. And they count down, they fly away.
They get out in the nick of time.
Gets out in the nick of time. They notice that nothing happens, and Spike goes,
"Oh, it does blow up."
It blows up, but it doesn't do any damage. They look back, and Spike goes, "Oh, that didn't work." Now, I've got a note about that, because apparently they put the word in the movie to guarantee a PG rating, because G-rated movies weren't doing so well, and they would actually get lesser time slots in the theaters. So they did that to make sure that they got a PG rating. Which, yeah, so.
When it got to video, I remember watching video versions that didn't have it in there.
Oh, no, they edited out of the video version, yeah. But not the 30th anniversary vision, so you've got, like, you know, one of the only human characters swearing very loudly.
Yeah, the only other one is Ultra Magnus saying, "Damn it," I think, when he's trying to open the Matrix, which is a little bit later.
So, yeah.
So, while the moon bases are being attacked...
That's when the mind control happens.
Well, while the moon bases are being attacked, they get the Autobots on Earth are getting radio notified about it, and that's when they decide that they've got to go destroy Unicron, I guess.
Well, because they learn about Unicron.
Yeah, and so that's the first time that they've learned about it. But then, isn't they're in a second attack now by the Decepticons on the rubble of Autobot City
as they're leaving, which further proves that Decepta, the homeworld, and Earth are like 2 seconds away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, have you ever seen Avenue 5, the show on HBO?
Yeah, with Hugh Laurie.
And the notifications, like, that they're trying to talk to each other between Earth and the space station, and it's like a 60-second delay. So then you're just like, you're trying to talk through something, and then it's like, no. Okay, wait, no, stop, no. Oh, and that's what it would be like.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's this instantaneous conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But then then Scatman Crothers gets eaten.
Both. I thought he was... Yeah, it must have been in that, because I'm pretty sure we discussed it that way.
I thought he survived to the end,
that's why my notes go, "Scatman, no!"
Maybe he does get
eaten.
Because
I think it goes, "Scatman, no, oh, and then the mind control scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then, my notes are, then there's just this kid who's there with all these robots around, and he's like soft and squishy and very killable. And then I'm like, he's us. He's mm-hmm. the demographic. He's us inside the story. He's our bastion situation. Please feel free to meta this with some never-ending story. That was a really good episode we did about a million years ago.
Mm-hmm. Now all we need is a little energon and a lot of luck dragons.
So while the Decepticons are attacking what's left of Autobot City, the two groups are trying to get away on separate ships. Hot Rod and RC are trying to save the little kid, and they're like flirting with each other, like, you need to stay next to me. Oh, no, you need to stay next to me. And I'm like, you know what? Hot Rod and RC are kind of a hot couple.
I ship them.
Yeah.
But they're probably space brother and sister. Them, Jen.
You think they're brother and sister? Oh,
because
man.
They're based off Luke and Leia.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there was that kiss in Empire Strikes Back, so maybe that's what they're trying to pair.
You know what? I'm going to make up my own canon for this. I'm going to ship them together. Screw that.
They have the sibling vibe, but they were not actually like created by the same creator.
They're like step robots.
Oh, never mind. I'm not going to.
Oh, step robot! I'm stuck in the space dryer.
So we were born with the same shipping label.
We were both made in China. Okay, so there's this thing that happened in 80s and 90s rom-coms where you would have like animosity to lovers trope. And I always kind of hated it because it reinforces the idea that as a straight couple, you can't be happy in your straight relationship. And it kind of reminds me of the whole like To the Moon Alice, the honeymooners.
Like it just introduces a place where you're abused or abusing.
Right.
And that's the norm.
Yeah. And I just don't like it. And it's like, why can't we have mutual, why can't we have relationships that are based off of mutual affection, mutual interest, and just the fact that you like being around the person?
Jen and I are very much opposites in a way. Mm-hmm. And the whole like fire and ice of the, like you'd think, oh, opposites, like fire and ice of that. But really what a good relationship with opposites is, and I can't say that we are a good example of a relationship, but I will say that the strengths we have are when we complement each other. Mm-hmm. And that's opposites attracting, right, for me.
I think every relationship is going to have a bit of like mutual, like you're going to be on the same page with some things and then you're going to be opposite. And it's really just finding a balance, but you still would want to be with them, you know?
You have to have a reason for being with them.
Right. And constantly bickering with your partner, to me, seems like the foundation of a short-term relationship.
Or just a very unhappy relationship.
Yeah. That's what I had with Hot Rod and RC, because there was that and the initial attack on Autobot City on Earth, they had that sort of like back and forth.
Now that you're saying it, now my brain is like flipping through all the 80s things that drove me crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the blank in the stone?
Romancing the Stone.
Romancing the Stone. That is like quintessential. That it's a bit of that in Joe versus the Volcano too.
Mm-hmm. Much Ado About Nothing, the Shakespearean play, has a bit of that like animosity, but what's best about Shakespeare is like it turns into this mutual like, yeah, we're bickering back and forth, but we've known each other a really long time, and now at the very end of it, we are still on the same page about this thing, and we can kind of like allow our relationship to blossom.
I don't mind a little bit of friction, you know. Right. In fact, I've used friction to my advantage quite a few times, but I feel like
you can't have too much friction; is going to wear you out.
Start a fire,
mm-hmm.
Whatever. It's not great. You're gonna have to get a cream for that.
Mm-hmm.
So they go off in separate ships, right, Jen?
Yeah. There's an onslaught of Decepticons. Galvatron says, I will crush you like Megatron crushed Optimus Prime, which is our biggest indication that Galvatron considers himself a completely separate entity from Megatron. And Ultra Magnus says, and you'll die trying just like Megatron. And there's a little bit of banter and shooting, and one of the sweeps asks if Galvatron wants them to take care of Ultra Magnus. And he's like, Ultra Magnus is mine. You can kill as many Autobots as you want. But it doesn't matter, because by the time that, like, interestingly, nobody dies in this scene. There should be a lot more death, I think, in this scene.
They got it all out of the way in the first act.
And the Autobots do get away in two different separate ships, and that does split the party again.
Oh, and this is where the dumb dinosaurs are with like the old-timey guys. The old-timey guy.
It's Cup, the dinosaurs, Hot Rod. I think that's it for them. And then in the other one, we have Ultra Magnus, Springer, RC, probably a few others.
The kid.
My notes go, I think I'm supposed to want to be the pink one, but I want to be Bumblebee. Like the original Bumblebee, not the modern James Cameron Bumblebee.
Michael Bay.
That's what I meant, Michael Bay.
So, here's literary time for you kids. Everyone sit down. Let me tell you about the proto-rabbits.
What the hell is a proto-rabbit?
So,
it's obviously the precursor to a rabbit.
Cup tells them about the proto-rabbits, and Grimlock keeps on going, me want to hear about the proto-rabbits. Tell me about the proto-rabbits.
In the ship, Grimlock is very much like a puppy, like constantly like in everything.
Which, if you're literary minded, this is a reference to John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men, where I think Lenny keeps on asking for him to read him the story about the rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Lenny really likes soft things.
Yep. He really likes soft things, which at one point is like, oh, that's great. And the other part is like, oh, no, wait a minute. That doesn't work out very well for Lenny, does it?
No, it doesn't.
No. So
I've never watched or read Of Mice and Men.
I had to read
it.
Oh,
my gosh.
Okay. Okay.
Whoa.
Okay. So I had to read Of Mice and Men for my high school English class. And I got so angry with how it ended. I literally threw the book across the room. I was backstage, like waiting for drama to start or something, and I was reading it, and I was so angry, I just chucked the book. And then there was a mock trial to whether or not we should put Lenny, like, should Lenny get the death penalty because of how it all ended. And I was like, no, I was the only one who was like, no, you do not put this man to death it was the catalyst that made me realize that the death penalty is ultimately more harmful than it causes more harm to a society than good.
It's been a long journey, but I'm anti-death penalty now too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I can see by your creased brow. I'm going to do the
what,
Sean.
You want me to tell you what I think it is first?
I'm going
to
do the Sean Notes version. It's two brothers.
Okay.
One is very smart and one is very big and very mentally handicapped, and he really likes small things. And he's kind of like the, oh, George, look what I found. Oh, George, look at this. I hug it and I pet it. And he hugs and he pets a little girl until she dies.
No, it wasn't a girl.
Oh, well,
it was he. So Lenny has the Lenny like really likes soft things, but because of his strength, he can't really control himself. So he like pets things to the point where they die. Like he snaps their neck. And they end up having to like run away on farms, like run from farm to farm because of the fact that Lenny is killing these like most of the time, like rabbits or dogs or animals. But they get work on the farm. This is during the Great Depression because Steinbeck, and they end up on a farm where like it's really working out well for George. And they meet some they have some like friends that they meet. And George is constantly talking to Lenny about this rabbit farm that they're going to have. But like the leader of all of the farmhands, he has a very attractive wife who's kind of like sleeps around because her husband is like borderline abusive, and she's not happy with it. She wants to be like a star in Hollywood and everything. And so the moment comes where she is letting Lenny pet her hair, but then she realizes his strength. She freaks out. He freaks out, and then he snaps her neck. And George has to take Lenny out into the woods and shoot him, or else he was going to get killed in a very gruesome way,
like by the lynch mob.
Lynch mob way, yeah. And this is someone who is disabled, like is neurally diverse.
He doesn't understand what he's doing at all.
Yeah, and that's why I threw the book across the room. Behind a drama stage in backstage of drama, because I was just like, I mean, like we've talked about like our family situations and like where we stand with them. And it's like it's like the knife in your heart, and you're like, no, I don't want this to happen. And you don't have to, you don't have to read the book.
I'm not going to,
because it's
not I cannot do that.
But I get where Steinbeck's coming. Like, it's a pretty progressive novel for its time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It brings to light the fact that we have to take people's mental capacity and ability and intention into account in terms of people's current criminal behavior.
Right. But it also is like this, it was also not taking that into account created this perfect storm that ultimately ended up with two people dying.
And
unnecessarily.
Wow. So sorry for bringing the room down. Grimlock says, show me the proto rabbits.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That is too dark of a reference for a children's movie. I don't like the dino cons. I don't.
Dino butts.
Whatever. I don't like them very much. But until today, when Sean was like, oh, Maddie likes them because they're like dumb like a dog. And I'm like, oh, okay. If I think of them like an animal, like a happy puppy, I can very much see myself liking them. But now, and thanks for like giving me this flip flop in one day, now he's like a poor human being who will be put down because he does not know his own strength nor his impact on other people.
I will say this. I think the Dinobots are treated better in the Transformers movie than Lenny was treated in Of Mice and Men.
Oh, no, they treated him poorly. And in this one, the Dinobots are actually the saviors. They come in and save like
three times.
Yeah, like three times. If it wasn't for the Dinobots, I think the Autobots would have lost.
Yeah.
So anyway, moving along. I'm sorry I brought that little bit of downer to everyone.
Is this where we have Galvatron attacking the ship and they have to do the emergency separation?
Yeah, I call this tiny ship escape.
Yeah. And then Galvatron is like, the Matrix has been destroyed. And I was like, you were just about as effective as Megatron.
But then what other than there's Robofish.
Robofish.
Yeah, one of the ships gets crash lands on an alien planet with really weird looking rings around it. And the other group has to destroy half of the ship in order to make it look like all of their ship got destroyed. And then they get far enough away, but then they're like, well, how do we go any further with half of the ship? And Perceptor says, there isn't a lot around in this area, but the planet of junk is in this vicinity. So they go and they're going after the planet junk.
Junk is my favorite way to refer to people's genitals in a non-gendered manner.
Before we get to the planet of junk, it is a hot rod and cup in some deep fish oil right now.
Yeah, robot fish, robot squid, robot sea life.
There's a battle, and you know I have a terrible time describing battles, but they don't die, which is good for this scene. And cup is left in a few pieces, and hot rod runs over, they can talk through oil or water or whatever. And he rolls them over as bubbles escape from them, which I thought was very poetic. But they don't breathe, so that is a good attention to detail.
But there's still probably, like, air in their, like, air pockets, yeah.
Okay, it doesn't matter. It literally does not matter. He rolls them over, and he embraces him thusly. You can't see, but embracing him so. And Cup goes, fix me.
And Hot Rod goes and grabs his arm and his leg.
They spend at least 5 seconds watching this robot go pick up the other pieces of the robot and then pick up the rest of the robot and start walking out of the water.
Because God forbid one of the new toys is killed.
Is Cup a new toy?
Cup is a new toy.
Oh.
There is a song that plays during this scene. It is called Nothing's Gonna Stand in Our Way, and it is by a band called Kick Axe. And yet, Sean, do you have a fact on this?
The band who sings a song on the soundtrack called Nothing Gonna Stand in Our Way and the song Hunger are listed on the soundtrack credits as Spectre General, but the band's name is actually Kick Axe. While they were assembling the soundtrack, the producers thought Kick's Axe was too suggestive for a children's film, so they changed the name of the band to Spectre General.
Did they do that with the band's consent?
They did not.
What did they do?
Nothing, because we've never heard of them before, and they probably were like, hey, at least we get our music out there.
Ew.
Like, we can do this for, like, you know, we get paid in exposure.
Back when that meant something.
But when it's, like, not the name of your band? They're going to have to change it to Spectre General. What are they going to do? Do like a heavy metal version of I Am the Very Modern of a Modern Major General?
It's all right, guys. In 30 years' time, the internet will allow people to do a two-way search and everything will be fine.
At the time, they were probably like, it's all right, guys. This movie bombed. No one's going to know who you are anyway, so don't worry about it. You just look that paid.
Don't we have a crash that someone says, remind me to give a raise to the autopilot?
Yes.
Yes, that did when the other party does wake up from their crash landing on the planet of junk, and Springer says, remind me to give the autopilot a raise.
And then that made me go into this like existential crisis of what does it mean to be an autopilot? With the Autobots, do the Decepticons have a Deceptopilot? Because autopilot.
I get it. I get you.
Enter Eric Idle.
Yeah. Well, while they're still in the ship before they get out, Daniel's like, "There's no, what can I do?" Like he's just this little boy. So RC says, "Maybe you can make yourself useful with Spike's exosuit." And which is basically a way for a human to get into something that does actually like transform and gives you the powers of a tiny robot, I guess. And then they do start going out and looking for pieces that they can start fixing. And in the distance, you see some robots pop out of the junk. And for some reason, Eric Idle's Retgar is talking, but he isn't moving his mouth. He's quoting some random commercials together. We will get into the details of why that is. But he basically says, something, operators are standing by. And does anybody else have anything to add to that scene?
Something about waking up with coffee or not waking up or yeah. something.
Between his accent and what he's trying to say, because they also give like this little weird like echo on his voice, I can't understand a single thing he says the entire movie. I'm like, wow, that's Eric Idle saying something about maybe I get operators or maybe like warranty or like guarantee. And I'm like, no, I don't know what he's saying. This is ridiculous. You could have hired anybody. You didn't need a Monty Python to have unintelligible dialogue.
No, I like him.
Was this movie originally done in Japanese and then there was an English dub?
No.
Okay.
It was made in Japan, but it mm-hmm. was American English in origin.
Right.
They do an evil close up on him, right? Is this the part where he goes, offer expiring while you wait, operators are standing by. Like he looks all he's got a
Fu Manchu.
I call it a Guy Fawkes. Doesn't it look more like a Guy Fawkes or is it just
No, it looks more like a Fu Manchu because it goes down.
Drops down. Guy Fawkes.
But it articulates. It's up in some scenes and it's down in others.
It's because it's a robot mustache.
Yeah, but this isn't like the robot mustaches of the planet that we saw at the beginning of the movie.
Which just look like cookie cutter things welded to their faces. This is like a tentacle for his lip.
Well, there are robot squids on this planet, so I guess that makes sense.
So there's the planet of junk where they are, and the robot squids are on the Quintessons world. The Sharktacons world.
Oh, I was for sure thought they were the same planet.
Me too.
No, they are two different planets.
So this is actually one of the best parts of the storytelling of the movie is that we do split up the party and we get two different plot points before the two parties merge back together again and go after Unicron, which is, you'll see that a lot, especially in Star Wars, where they start, they've got action going on and then they'll like, basically match up the action between two different things that are going on.
Okay, so back on planet Junk. On the Quintessons planet, we have Croc and Hot Rod.
Cup.
Like C-U-P, cup?
Mm-hmm.
K-U-P.
K-U-P, yeah.
Oh. Cup and Hot Rod have banter about how you left something out. No, I put you back together. Oh, yeah, so I feel a lot better than I did before. You've got a burr out of this one socket. We got to transform, go somewhere. Blah, and they speed off. They transform, speed off. But they come to a body of water or whatever we think of as water, probably more fish oil or whatever. But out of it come these robots, which I call crockbots, but that's probably not right. And Cup is like, I know what to do. I will greet them with the universal greeting. Now, I have been married to this human here for so long and have watched this movie not this often. Not like every few years we'd watch it again. And I've never been able to say the greeting correctly. I add an extra syllable every time until 2 days ago. So
say it. Say it.
No, I want to hear, now that I know I say it right, I want to hear Sean say it.
Bricka-bracka, bricka-bracka, hey, mecha-lecka, hi, mecha-hiney, bong.
How about you, Liz? Go for it.
Back to back, belly to belly, don't give a damn, I'm done dead already, uh-oh, bong.
Back to back. The zombie jamboree.
Bong.
Bong.
I didn't know that had earwormed into your life.
I have it on so many of my YouTube playlists. Sometimes I'll just be like, I'm in a bad mood. I'm going to listen to Zombie Jamboree.
It is. Ba weep, grana, weep, mini Vaughn.
Bong.
I always say bong. I used to add an extra weep in the middle of there. And I say bong and bong, bong, bon.
But that's just something that you've
both heard of them say today. It both ways, I think, really.
Yeah, I think you're right. So Cup says it, and then Hot Rod repeats it, and then the Croc Cons start repeating it.
And they also hold out Energon tablets or whatever.
Energon goodies, yeah.
Which also, hey, forbidden snacks, I do want to eat that.
I mean, to be fair, just as you know, the human race, we need to have a universal greeting that is followed up by giving someone food that you like.
Yes.
It makes sense. So should we create the universal greeting here?
Ba wah.
Ba bing, with the ba, da bang, bang, da bang.
Bong.
And then you hand them a Laffy Taffy. Or like an Airhead. It looks a bit like an Airhead. Yeah. Like a flat, triangular thing that's pink.
Though that is giving a lot of credit to Kid Rock, and I don't know if we want to give credit to Kid Rock for anything.
We do not, in fact, want to.
And what if someone's diabetic? You can't give them an Airhead. That would be like, ugh. Mm-hmm.
Get sugar-free ones.
I'll get sugar. Okay.
Energon is like this glowing substance that changes colors, so it is like the gayest food. I love it.
So we just need glowing. Is there anything that is there any kind of substance that glows that you can also intake it?
Yeah.
Glowing gay food? I mean, isn't that like liquor?
I had a kid I babysat who accidentally bit through a glow stick, and I learned that they are non-toxic.
So we just...
Fun fact, you can pour those into like a mason jar of water. And the liquids will still like gel together. So you can like shake it up and make a little whirlwind thing in the dark, and it'll do this little tornado, and then it'll regroup at the bottom. It's pretty cool.
There are glow-in-the-dark food additives that you can't eat. Mm-hmm. So we could let's do it.
Rice crackers or...
Well, like Mountain Dew glows in black light, so hook that up.
Just need a black light.
Yeah. Baweep Grana, Fleet, Ariana Grande... bong, and then you like hold up the black light and hand them a Mountain Dew.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. They got sugar-free Mountain Dew, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere?
Yeah. Just always
Diet
sugar-free.
Mountain Dew. One time mom was drinking Mountain Dew, and I'm like, I never struck you as a Mountain Dew person. Why are you drinking it all of a sudden? And she goes, oh, well, my doctor says I had to give up caffeine, so I just switched to Diet Mountain Dew. And I was like, Mom, I know that in general, a clear soda is no caffeine, but I assure you that Diet Mountain Dew has more caffeine than your Diet Coke ever did. She stopped drinking it after that. Now she's on Perrier. It's fine. We're fine.
Thank you, Applauder, for continuing with us through part two of our discussion of 1986's The Transformers the Movie. There's still one part left, and we can't wait to bring you the conclusion of our walkthrough, along with our shocked and applaudable moments. Have some extra gas in your podcast tank and want to explore some other film discussions? The Everything Sequel podcast is dedicated to discussing the most difficult of movies to get right, the sequel. And I Hope You Suffer watches and discusses the horror movies you don't watch with Nathan, Kit, and Katie. Look for links to these shows in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and someone who promises to keep it to herself when she's got the touch, Jen. Do you know it's within your Energon-infused power to light our darkest hour? By leaving us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or directly at shockedandapplaud.com, You help lift us up in search results, almost like we're combining into one giant Applaudertron. We'll be back next week for part 3 of this epic children's 80s animated toy commercial. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you
for patroning the peculiar.